In this second hour of Midday, we continue our discussion of religion in Maryland and the U.S. Americans' confidence in the church and organized religion has fallen dramatically over the past four decades, hitting an all-time low this year of 42%, according to Gallup. Where are you on this today? Do you practice the faith as your parents and grandparents did? Have you changed affiliations? Or have you dropped religion altogether? If so, do you ever feel any regrets or yearnings to get back in a way that's relevant to your life? We'd like to hear from you this hour. The phone lines are open. Joining us will be the Reverend M. Dion Thompson, Episcopal Rector at the Church of the Holy Covenant, as well as an atheist and a member of an active city parish who has committed her life to her faith. More Midday after the news. And welcome back to Midday. Pretty interesting discussion, as I thought it would be. How do people believe today, if they believe at all? What kind of spirituality are people searching for, if any? And how do young people approach religion today? What does it take to lead a congregation? Another question we'll tackle this hour. The Reverend M. Dion Thompson is in the studio with us, rector of the Church of the Holy Covenant, an Episcopal parish with 100 members, located on the Alameda in northeast Baltimore. I've always called you Dion Thompson, so now it's Father Thompson, right?
It is now Father Thompson.
And has been for 8 or 9 years now.
8 years.
I got to mention here that M. Dion Thompson was a reporter at The Sun with me for 15 years and worked at as a newspaper reporter elsewhere. But it became a priest 8 years ago.
I was ordained eight years ago. 3 years before that, going to seminary.
Right. So. Yeah. Well, it's nice to have you on the show, Dion. I just saw Dion on the bus last week before you were scheduled to be on the show. So,
right, my traveling chapel, the number three bus.
The number three bus. Anyway, well, thank you for being with us for this discussion. I also want to welcome Eric Green to the show. Eric Green is a retired government employee who wrote an essay in The Sun several months ago that we thought was interesting. He described how he, as an atheist, monthly drives his wife, a believer, a Catholic, right?
Catholic, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. To the St. Jude Shrine in Baltimore,
yes.
Once a month. And she goes in the shrine and you go get a cup of coffee.
Yes, I have my own church,
yeah,
where I get a cup of coffee.
So we'll get a chance to talk to you, Eric Green, okay, about being an atheist and being married to someone who believes. Anne-Marie Brennan-Zelenka is with us as well. She taught social justice at Catholic high schools in the Baltimore area for several years. She's a regular churchgoer at St. Francis of Assisi Parish, also in northeast Baltimore, not far from M. Dion Thompson's parish congregation. Nice to have you on the show, Anne-Marie.
Thank you.
Brennan-Zelenka.
Nice to be here.
Do you mind? I wanted to start with a reading a couple of the emails that came in from the previous hour. So why don't I read those, and feel free to comment on them, okay? One follows up on the discussion we just had about science in the previous hour, the question about, you know, as science advances and people's understanding of science advances, does their belief, does their religious life diminish? First, says Eric, writing in, the advance of science and science pulling people away from religion is a pretty big reason for me. In the past, religion could provide answers to questions that nothing else could. Now science has made great strides, and there has not been a single question that needed to call on religion for an answer, especially in the areas of evolutionary biology and cosmology. Also, when people see how divisive religion has become politically and the harm it causes, it becomes hard to rationalize belief in religion. Thank you very much for having this discussion. What do you think about that, Dion?
Well, I think...
Father Thompson. I'm going to call you Father Thompson.
No problem. Okay, thank you. In my experience, I think as science progresses and we hear more and more answers to our questions, for me, the complexity of creation begins to argue more and more for a creator, only because it seems, how is it possible, when you get down to the sort of molecular level, that these processes are so in sync and so complicated and complex that I think, is this all by accident? And it seems that it's not. And in the world of science, you have both ends. You have some scientists who go to say, no, this proves that there is no God. And other scientists who say, well, by my exploration, it does.
There are some.
It does
there
prove
are
that
some,
there is some
yeah.
creator, something.
In fact, we did a show
it.
On that. Yeah, but I mean, the idea that society advances through knowledge gained, enlightenment, didn't necessarily follow that religion would fall off. This is a phenomenon that we're talking about now that's been kind of rapid in the United States, according to our guests in the previous
right.
hour. Eric, do you ever thought about that, being an atheist?
Well, the question would be, major question would be, what could be before things were created? How could there be a nothing? And how does that work? If before there was a universe or a cosmos, what was there before? And atheists would struggle with that question of, if you go from nothing to something, there must have been something to start it. But I think I've been reading several books about scientists who are saying it's not so much that there's a God, it's the way science works. And it doesn't necessarily mean there's a God for the creation.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Anne-Marie, let me ask you this. A young person who's sort of not that interested in coming to church, maybe shows up for a mass once in a while, then you don't see him for several months. Are they struggling with the question of science versus religion, or is something else going on there with young people?
Well, interesting. First of all, I have to say my experience has been mainly in Catholic schools.
Right.
And I have observed students from about 1975 up to the present. And interestingly, I think it's, again, mixed. There are some students who really do begin to question whether there's God, in terms of what they're learning in science, and others who get very excited for the same reason what they're learning in their science classes and about cosmology particularly.
You mean affirms what they believe?
Affirms their belief there is a God. This is so beautiful, and so there is a God present.
Okay.
I'd like to go back to your email. Mm-hmm. It seems as if the writer was talking about how religion is sort of not used in a moral sense. And an atheist would say there's been a perversion of the religion when it's used the wrong way. And I think based on what you read, it seemed like he was a little bitter about things. Mm-hmm. I'm not.
Yeah, I picked up on that too.
Yeah.
Tell us your story, Eric, if you don't mind, because people probably want to know about you and your wife and these trips that you make to Baltimore once a month so she can go to the St. Jude Shrine.
Right.
But what was your journey to being an atheist? Or were you raised in an atheist
household? I was raised in the Jewish religion, and I went to Sunday school for 9 years, and then I just sort of fell off the religion. I decided that it didn't work for me. And we used to go on Friday night, and so I just sort of dropped out of the whole religious thing and felt fine about it, because I think I'm a moral person. There's a question, if you're an atheist or not religious, can you still be a moral, ethical person? And my answer is yes, you can, because that's the way you're raised by your parents. But I know a lot of people might question that statement, that if you're not religious, then there must be something that's missing in your moral direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't announcing myself as an atheist, but that's just sort of how I identified myself to myself. And then I met my wife, and I found
out. How long ago did you meet your wife?
This is about 19 years ago. I got married late.
And she's
my wife.
She's Catholic?
She's Catholic. And
so when you got to that discussion about religion, I don't know when that came up in your courtship. But
pretty much in the beginning.
In the beginning.
And I kind of had dated other women who had been Catholic, so it wasn't new to me that, in fact, I seemed to get along better with Catholic women than people in my own religion. So that did not bother me in the least, although I didn't know the extent of how much she believed and how much she was going to go to church. And then we got married, and then she said, and I don't know how she even knew, well, St. Jude Catholic Church is where she goes in Baltimore when we go once a month.
The St. Jude's shrine.
The shrine, yeah. Yes. And I found out things about the Catholic Church that were interesting to me, that the patron saint for my wife was St. Jude, and she explained what that meant. And she said when we went to the church, she would pray for me, and then other people there would come up and say they're going to pray for both of us. So I always felt that was a good feeling, even though I didn't really believe what was going on in the church as far as helping me or a miracle for any problems. But it seemed to make sense. And
It works for the two of you. You've been married for
18 years.
18 years. 19,
yeah.
So she goes to the St. Jude Shrine, and then you just...
I go to a cafe on... I won't say where because somebody might come after me, but...
Is that something you worry about? That's not something you worry about, is it?
When I wrote the article, I was a little worried that some people might take offense, yes.
Well, did it happen?
No, because I didn't go to the church for a couple of months.
Eric Green wrote an op-ed in the Baltimore Sun explaining why he does this.
Yes.
And the upshot is that you respect what your wife does.
I respect everybody who goes to the church, yes.
Father Thompson, why don't you tell us also about your journey? I might learn something here myself because I'm not sure I ever talked to you in any detail about your journey to the priesthood.
Okay.
Were you raised in the Episcopal family?
I was not raised Episcopalian. I was raised evangelical, American, Protestant, slain in the blood of the Lamb sort of church. And I had the same drop-off that a lot of folks have. Age of 16 or 17, stopped going to church till my mama was no longer interested. And for the next 25 years or so, I would go to church when I visited my grandmother. That would be the main thing to get me into church. But came to a point in my life where I will describe it as a holy encounter. And that holy encounter led me to the Book of Common Prayer, then to the Church of the Holy Nativity in Pimlico on Northwest Baltimore, and from there through a series of steps into the priesthood. This is while I was still a journalist.
Mm-hmm. And what has this been like for you for 8 years? Has it been as rewarding as you hoped it would be?
It has been a fascinating experience.
it's been a challenge.
It has been rewarding. It has been challenging.
Tell us about the challenge.
Well, I would say, first off, to anybody who is considering that they want to be a priest or a minister or a pastor, to read the Exodus experience in the Old Testament and Moses leading the Hebrew people. If you want to know about how difficult it can be having folks who are blessed and wonderful and feeling so good about you one day and the next week it's like we're hungry again and what have you done for us lately. But on the whole, it has been a profound experience for me.
And what about keeping people coming? I'm curious about that. Have you seen a fall off in your congregation? Is that something of concern to you, or do you see it going the other way?
It is a concern, just in terms of that demographic, shall we say, 18 to 30-ish around there. There's always a drop-off. Folks will be acolytes. They'll be serving in church. They hit 18, and oftentimes they'll stop. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the hardest things, is trying to make sure we begin to figure ways to engage those folks, either liturgically, by the type of worship or the type of music or by programs. Sometimes I've seen a lot of folks are interested not just in coming to church, but wanting to be a part of something. If that church is doing something, is active in some sort of way, engaging with the community, engaging with the issues of the day, that's more interesting than just coming and sitting for 2 hours on a Sunday.
And Anne-Marie, let's go over your story a little bit. Anne-Marie Brennan-Zelenka, I grew up in a Catholic household, I assume, in Baltimore?
No, actually, I grew up in Washington, D.C., in a large Irish Catholic family, 7 children, and with certainly Catholic parents. So my experience has been all Catholic, and I'm old enough to say that I experienced pre-Vatican II, and to remember it well, and yet was young during Vatican II, and so therefore I grew up as a strong Vatican II person in my faith. And I don't know if it's because of age or just enlightenment, from what I've read or people I've heard in the faith, I feel that one of the reasons that keeps me attending to my Catholic faith is that we are changing. There's been some new insights, maybe not changing fast enough for a lot of people, and certainly we've had our problems. But I see our faith, and every faith, it doesn't have to be Catholic, as a community of people who, and which is what is important to me, that my faith is both personal and communal. And so therefore, I have to remember where I'm going here with this, being part of this community, one of the things that I've learned in older years was that of the divine is in all of us. And that's not unique to a teaching in the Catholic faith, I know that, but that was not taught to us so much as children. It was more the Catholic faith, as my father once said, it's pray, pay, and obey way of looking at church, and you certainly would not miss Mass on Sunday.
Where did you get this message about the divine in all of us? Was it from a Catholic priest? Is this something you picked up on?
No, I think more in the readings I've done in theology and so on. I've taken a number of courses in theology. Mm-hmm. I also have to say, though, that during the 90s, I spent about 8 years going to Mass on Sunday morning at St. Francis of Assisi and then going over to the Quaker Meeting House, where, of course, this is, and I found that very freeing, and it also helped
That's
me to mature in
my
faith.
Why did you do that?
Well, a couple of reasons, but mainly I felt I needed a sense of quiet silence. And in particularly since Vatican II, our liturgies, I think, are beautiful if you know and understand what's happening in the ritual. But there's not time for silence. And to go and sit with other people for an hour in complete silence, I found very powerful. And when people did speak occasionally, that's where I really began to mature and realize that I don't need people telling me what is right, what is wrong. And that's why I also feel the church recognizes this as well, that we know it's built within us. I mean, for someone to say, as I believe Eric was saying earlier about, oh, how can you be a moral person if you don't believe in God and so on? Well, we teach in the Christian faith that all of us, and this goes back to ancient times, Aristotle and so on, that this is built within us as human beings, that we have the sense of right and wrong, particularly by age, you know, 7 and so on. However, the church does have teachings that give, as I used to say to the students, are tools to help us in our conscience formation. And when we are faced with more difficult decisions, which most of them are today, gray area, they're not black and white for sure. And that's why I still think institutional religions are important to us.
Is it fair to say that you have sort of customized your view of the spiritual life a little bit to make it form to – you wanted to remain
yes.
a Catholic, right?
Yes.
Despite it all.
Yes, despite
you,
it all.
But you sort
right.
of customized your beliefs a little bit for yourself to make yourself satisfied.
Yes, but I've had a lot of support. It isn't like I consciously or creatively came up with this way of right, thinking. Right. I am parts of groups of people within the faith and some without outside of the faith who, by sharing where they're coming from, have helped me to develop. And yet it has never challenged me to say I want to leave the church.
What do you think of that, Father Thompson?
Customizing one's religion?
Yeah.
Well, I think we all try to make sure that the religion works for us, that the teaching works for us. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges is that we've have the church has had its doctrine. And I think some of your earlier guests talked about that mm-hmm. struggle where the doctrine and the teaching began to disconnect from the society and the desires of the society and the desires of the people. So when in the Episcopal Church, we are still sorting through our relationship with slavery and our relationship with racism. There are still African-American folks who I know will have gone to an Episcopal church maybe 30 years ago or so and been told, well, you know, you will probably be more comfortable at another church.
At an AME church.
Or there's a black Episcopal church across town.
Or a black Episcopal church.
You'd be better
right? yeah.
off there. Mm-hmm. And so those sorts of encounters, whether it be on a race level, whether it be gay and level, mm-hmm. I go into a church, and rather than finding a place that is inclusive and welcoming to me, I find a place that is exclusive. And that then turns me completely off because I'm thinking, well, church should be the place
right.
where I should be welcome.
But this is your church. So what do?
First, you have to you engage in some teaching, and I think the Episcopal Church has witnessed to the struggle of opening oneself up, opening the church up, and all that we've gone through lately in terms of homosexuality, ordaining gay priests, gay bishops, ordaining women. I mean, these have been huge fracturing points within the life of the church, but a witness to our struggle of what it means to be an open and welcoming community.
Before we take our first break here in this hour, and we'll come back and take some phone calls from our listeners, I had a question for Eric Green, the atheist who's sitting here with me.
You're known as
I'm going to wear this as a badge of honor,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. But do you consider atheist. Yourself a spiritual man?
Yes, I do.
Can you have you thought about that?
What, all the time.
How do you define that?
I feel things. I feel like I'm very sensitive to other people, and I'm always trying to respect how they feel about things. And the question I always have is, does somebody who's religious have an advantage over an atheist? Because they have something to believe in out there, mm-hmm. and they can grab onto it. And as an atheist, and I like to call myself a soft atheist because I'm not completely 100% thinking, you know, there's nothing out there, nothing, no spiritual guide or person. But I'm always wondering, you know, when a religious person, what happens to them when they lose faith? What do they do?
That's a good question.
Yes.
In fact, we'll open it up to our audience here. We have to take a break. We'll come back. And if you want to address that after the break, you can, Anne-Marie. 410-662-8780. It's a good question you ask. Eric Green and Reverend Dion Thompson and Anne-Marie Brennan-Zelenka, my guests in this hour. And you can be, too, by phone, 410-662-8780. We welcome your phone call. Here's an email from Naomi, who says she's a Republican Mormon stay-at-home mom. I am one of the affiliateds, and my faith is definitely at the center of my personal life. My husband and I are both Mormon, and we met through church friends and were married in rural Utah, the same place where my parents were married. Church is not just something that we believe, but it's part of a rich culture that has helped us to create our own family practices. In many ways, this is a challenging time for our church, as our leaders speak out publicly and as we members have personal conversations about the role of gay members in a church that affirms traditional marriage and about the role of women within a church which has a male-only priesthood. I have personally felt the emotional pain and the cognitive dissonance of these questions as my gay brother tries to figure out his relationship with the church and as a sister-in-law tries to reconcile her egalitarianist feminism with our church. Mm. Why do I keep going to church and keep identifying as Mormon? Well, like many deeply religious people out there, I can't deny the faith that I have felt and seen in my life. I really, truly believe the gospel of Jesus Christ. Also, I can't deny the good that a faith community does and has the potential to do. On the Sunday before the unrest in Baltimore, our local leaders invited all the members throughout Baltimore to join in a fast for the youth of Baltimore. Okay, no judgment about that. But thank you very much, Naomi, for sharing those thoughts with us. So there's a struggle there that a lot of people can relate to if they, you know, affiliated with a church that has a doctrine, a specific mm-hmm. belief that they are in conflict with. It's very common for American Catholics, for instance, and other religions.
I think, yes. I mean, all religions within Christianity have that basic struggle of the doctrine versus the teachings as they are revealed in Scripture of Jesus Christ,
yeah,
which are often in conflict. And I can remember in my own journey of coming back into the church and at one point thinking to myself, well, how is it possible for me, a black man to go back into a religion that supported slavery, that was institutional in making slavery possible in the United States, in Great Britain. How can I go back to that? And one of my challenges was to, in a sense, go past some of the doctrine that had been built up, but go back to what Jesus had said and sort of find my sort of beginning point there, mm-hmm. rather than find my beginning point
with
in
the
what
doctrine,
the yeah. superstructure of the church says.
Yeah, yeah.
Emma Dion Thompson, Father Thompson is rector of the Church of the Holy Covenant here in Baltimore. Anne Marie Brennan Zelenka is with us, who is a longtime educator in the Catholic schools in Baltimore and is an active member of St. Francis of Assisi Church. I made spaghetti alla carbonara once yes. with Father Bonadio.
Oh, yes, yes. I remember reading
Father
about
Joseph
that.
Father Joseph Bonadio,
yes,
right?
Yes, he's our 11:30 Mass on Sundays.
Oh, okay. We actually had a spaghetti alla carbonara
contest yes.
and he made a very good one.
Yes.
Eric Green is with us, too, who's joining us from, you live in Rockville?
No, I live in Arlington,
Virginia. Arlington,
Virginia,
that's right. And you drive up once a month
yes.
to Baltimore so your yes. wife, who is Catholic, can yes. go to the St. Jude Shrine.
Exactly.
Does this constitute your one trip to Baltimore coming to midday, or will you make a special trip for your wife again?
It's basically the one trip. But
so we got your one trip this month?
This is my one trip this month.
Does this mean she's out of luck then for St. Jude?
Well, I'm trying to convince her to go to Camden Yards to a baseball game. So, and then we can go to St. Jude before and then the baseball game.
Some comments. Oh, I'm sorry. Anne-Marie, you wanted to say something before about spiritual life. Right?
Well, yes. And before that, some remarks that Eric made. But, I was thinking that in our Catholic faith, and I think this, again, can be applied to all Christian religions, here in America, we have become a mature population in terms of understanding. We're educated. We're more educated. We're not the new immigrants. And the more educated and the more we do of reading the scriptures and then looking at what our church teaches, the traditions of the church, people are questioning. And especially when you read the gospel of Jesus Christ, who is all welcoming. And luckily, I'm in a parish, St. Francis of Assisi, where Father Burke, Monsignor Burke, is so welcoming, and the community is. And he actually will question, why don't we have, for example, more people in our neighborhoods of color, as well as gays and so on, who live close by. And I feel the church has changed in the 25 years I've been part of it. I can see a big difference of people coming in. But I do think that people today are making their faith their own. And as I said earlier, they're not just, at least in the Catholic faith, where you just wouldn't question what the priest, the bishop, and certainly the pope said. And we're learning, for many people, the difference between what is doctrine and within doctrine, what is doctrine that is considered non-questionable.
But if you make your faith your own, mm-hmm. then to Eric's point and others who wrote in earlier, why do you need any religion? If you make your faith your own, I can customize my beliefs based on the teachings of Jesus, the teaching of I can go to the Torah, I can go to the Talmud, I can go to the Quran and pull a little bit from each one. And
I agree. I think that it's very true. And I think people should learn more about other world religions and outside of Christianity. But I feel, for me...
Oh, I don't mean it as an academic exercise.
No,
I mean actually incorporating my own customized idea about a spiritual life.
It may not be an intellectual exercise, but if you are reading these other sources, scriptures of other religions, and so on, you do learn from them and the beauty of them, and you do, I think, naturally incorporate some of this. And it doesn't, for me, this has happened within the Catholic faith. The courses I've taken, of course, I took many over at the Ecumenical Institute, so they weren't all taught by Catholics and so on. But other places where I've studied, it's been presented by Catholic professors and so mm-hmm. on. So it was very much of an intellectual exercise. And then, of course, I am part of a group, and I don't want to go off on this, but a group that we've been together for 28 years, and we've done all kinds of readings. It's a spiritual group, and we get together on a regular basis every 3 weeks or so.
All right. Emery, we have to go to the phone line.
Sure.
Is there one more thing you wanted to say?
Just wanted to say that I think within one's faith, you can talk about customizing. Mm-hmm. I just find that it opens up. I feel much more mature in my faith than I did 30 years ago.
Okay. And you don't worry about getting a letter from the Vatican saying you've gone off the reservation or something, right?
No, only once in all my years of teaching did I have something.
Did you want to say something about that, Eric?
I would just say that whatever works, quote Larry David.
Yeah, okay, whatever works. No, you can't say that, Father Thompson.
I can't say whatever works. I do think that one of the places for religion is that it gives us a sense of community. And I think that's one of the driving things that brings people together. Yes, we do explore the faith. Yes, we do have questions. But we also desire a community, a group of people that we can be with in this walk that we're doing on our lives.
Let's go to the phone lines to take some calls, and please feel free to comment on them. Milton in Edgewood, thank you for holding. Go right ahead, Milton.
Dan, thank you for 2 hours of this because, my goodness gracious, we need it. I got so many possible comments, but I ain't got time.
Well, give us one good one, Milton.
Okay, in response to what Dr. Thomas just said, I can't try to quote him. I don't have to. Everybody heard it. But I'm going to quote God, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. In Hebrew 10:25, we are not supposed to forsake the assembling of ourselves together. We do need a community. Thank you, Dr. Thomas. Eric, the atheist guy, made a comment earlier that intrigued me because it reminded me of what I used to think and still do about, you know, we are beginnings and ends because, you know, there's creation and there's birth and death. So, but before that, Eric mentioned, what about before creation, if there was one, since he's atheist? Atheists wonder about, what about all that? Well, naturally we wonder because we don't know nothing about that. All we know is the beginnings and ends. And since he mentioned that his history is Jewish, he may not be able to handle this, but in 2 Timothy, watch this, 2:15, it says, study to show thyself approved unto God. And you know what? If we do that, we don't have to worry about what the church changes to be, what the religion means, you know, different religions. We don't have to worry about what we think and, you know, do what God, Jesus says, not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, but he that doeth the will of my Father. That's Matthew 7:21.
Okay. All right, Milton. Thank you very much. Eric, you want to respond to that?
The atheist
I'm a
guy.
Little speechless at the moment here.
Yeah, I can't cite the Bible as like he
yes,
can.
Yes, I cannot quote make all those quotations, but I can say that he raises some very good points about the creation. And again, it's a lifelong question about how we got here. And
everyone wonders about that. No.
Yes, and I don't think it's a...
Well, not actually. Yeah. No, it's not true that everyone... Some people believe they have the answer for that.
Yes.
Right?
I would just say that I respect somebody who's believes what they want to believe, and they born that way and raised that way. But for myself, as I just have a different interpretation.
Alicia in Timonium, we'll go to you next. Thanks for calling Midday. Alicia, you're on the air now.
Yeah, how are you guys? Very interesting conversation. I just wanted to comment on the one gentleman's comment about whether or not you can be a good person if you're an atheist. And I just would hope we would be so beyond that. I would think that would be a rhetorical question. I'm a Christian, but it would just seem, of course, you can be a good person if you're an atheist or agnostic or whether you're Muslim or Jewish. But I also think... As a mother of four and a pediatrician, I think the vilification of the organized religion is sad. People will often say to me, it's so great you take your kids to church, and I'll think, what? I'm just trying to make my own life easier. I mean, whether or not you believe in the divinity of Jesus Christ, everything he taught was what we all should hope, you know, to strive to be. So, and so many churches do so many good things. Like when I take my kids, there's always Christmas, you know, gifts for poor children and Easter baskets and all sorts of things. So, you know, I think organized religion gets a bad rap. But whether or not you're Christian, you know, our society was really founded on Judeo-Christian values. And most of us, whether we identify as Jewish or Christian, we were formed by those values. So,
okay.
Thank you. My comment.
Yeah, appreciate that, Alicia. How did we learn that it was bad to steal, that it was wrong to steal? Where did this come from? Well, did this come from the Ten Commandments? Did I need the Ten Commandments to learn that when I was a kid? Where did this come? Didn't this come from my parents? This question came up the other day. I don't know if any of us can actually say where we learned that it was wrong to steal, but we knew at some point that it was wrong to steal. I don't know
exactly.
If it was from watching Charlton Heston in the movie or not. But it's there, right? Some things just seem instinctual.
Exactly. I was speaking to that earlier. That it is. I do believe that there are certain things that are built within each person to know right from wrong.
No, Father Thompson says learn that. You have to be taught that.
But
right?
I think you have to be taught that. I think basically that we are we have to be instructed on good.
Right.
Because
you don't need to be affiliated with a church to learn that.
Well,
right?
No, you don't have to be affiliated with a church. You can be taught the difference between good and evil. But I'm just saying, I don't think intrinsically we know that. But I think that is something that has to be taught to us, because I think if left to our own devices, we can get into a whole lot of trouble.
There's some truth to that, too. What I see, the role of parents and what Catholic education or education, any faith-oriented school, or even in the public schools, you're reinforced in these morals. It's a support. I think there is a sense in a child, they kind of know they're being sneaky. Just to give an example, I have a niece who at one point said, and she was only 2 years old, said to her mother, Mommy, don't come in here. She had the door closed. Mommy, don't come in here now. And right away, the mother knew she was doing something, and the child knew, I'm doing something my mom won't like. And I think there is this instinctual belief or sense within one that certain things are right and wrong. Now, I know there's a lot of gray matter here, and we do need support in that.
It was just a question that came up the other day when we were talking about getting ready to do this show. About where these teachings come from. Is doctrine, is the Ten Commandments, or was it your parents? Do you need, like, it goes to Eric's question about whether you need to be a believer in order to be a good person, a moral person.
I think there are also people who steal, and if they get away with it, they may feel better about themselves in a perverse sort of way. If they get caught, then they feel bad.
Eric, thanks very much. We've got to take another break. Eric Green, Father Dion Thompson, and Anne-Marie Brennan Zelenka. You can join us, too, at 410-662-8780. We'll be right back. All right, with the word non-theism or non-theist on an email here. Non-theism can be expressed in a variety of ways. Strong or positive atheism is the positive belief that a god does not exist. Someone who does not think about the existence of a deity may be termed a weak or negative atheist, or more specifically, implicitly atheist. So non-theism, I'm not really sure what that is. I guess that's in the realm of the atheist, right?
I'm thinking of Thomas Jefferson when you bring up the word.
A non-theist?
Theist. Yes,
okay.
Because he believed in, I don't know if he believed in God per se, but he believed in nature and spirituality. Although he owned slaves at the same time.
Right.
So how could he be a, right. You know, there's the dilemma.
This is from an email by Kyle in Glen Burnie. Who describes himself as a non-theist. He says, I appreciate the discussion of religion and how it has changed between millennials and previous generations. As a millennial and non-theist recovering Catholic, I understand the efforts to understand the loss of faith by assigning blame to the internet or politics or science. However, the biggest reason I'm not religious is because it's not true. Having attended a Catholic high school in Baltimore and raised in a small church in Baltimore County, I was not brought up in a strict religious household. It was more loose and cultural. But when I attended high school, I finally began thinking about the belief system, the tenets of the faith, and what it meant to be a believer. To believe is not only illogical, it is anti-logic for me. It calls on the believer to flatly ignore commonly understood information. When I and several fellow non-theists challenged our teachers in religion class in high school, we were told that we, quote, just had to have faith. Faith is one of the most dangerous philosophical concepts imaginable. When unpacked, it literally means to believe without proof. It asks the believer to toss aside facts that may demonstrate a different direction to truth because it contradicts the faith. Well, Kyle, thank you very much for the email. Father Thompson, I don't know if you could win the argument with Kyle or win him over.
I cannot win the argument with Kyle. That is basically your orientation. And a lot of what he says, yes, it is true that there is the doctrine, there is the faith, and it is at times in conflict with what we perceive to be reality. Mm-hmm. And you have to make, in a sense, the leap of faith, which does not disprove faith, I feel, and at the same time does not disprove what Kyle would say about how he sees the world. Mm-hmm. And so I can accept that, yes, for him, it's fine.
Have you encountered people in the 8 years that you've been a priest who said, I'm losing faith, help me, or I'm losing faith, I'm not sure I can continue to do this? Have you had discussions like that with people?
I have. And usually it's often in times of crises when an unexpected death or some kind of trauma has happened, and we run into this idea where we think sometimes that because I have faith and because I believe in God, then therefore God is in a sense a force field to protect me from all that is happening. And when that, in a sense, the force field gets penetrated, then what's the point? Why should I believe if all is going to happen to me anyway? And at that point, we get into a conversation where I think faith then becomes a way of living within the world. And how do we live morally within the world? How do we engage with suffering in the world in a way that keeps us vital and alive and connected with each other and connected with the divine? Understanding that just because I go to church doesn't mean the left rear wheel of my car isn't going to go spinning off and some disaster happened to me.
Anne-Marie Brennan Zelenka, faith got you through some tough times, too.
Yes. I just recently had a breast cancer and found today after 5 years that so far I am cured and doing well.
Great.
Yeah, this morning, so I feel
and
very
this
good.
This is your birthday too.
Yes, it's.
So that's a great birthday present.
It is.
Wow.
It is very good. And there were some other issues. The adoption of my son, I oftentimes felt was due to the prayers of the faith community I belong to, and so on. But Father was saying, I just so agree. You articulated it all so very well. But one of the things that attracts me about being part of the faith is the community, as you were saying, and also the direction. For instance, I've been studying the Pope's encyclical on the common care for our common home, which is absolutely beautiful, is readable by any adult person, even young adult person, certainly. And I don't know how many people from the Pew Foundation, I think very few Catholics even know about it. The media, I think, has done a better job publicizing this than other ones. But what's so beautiful to me is that as a Catholic and being a part of a community, I've learned about this, and it helps to direct my life in many ways. So I just wanted to add on to the whole sense of social justice as well as service.
So, Eric, I'm curious about the crisis in life, you know.
Okay, I can speak to that.
Sudden death of someone you love.
Yes, my mother passed away about 10 years ago, and I remember my first question was, what kind of God would allow my mother to die? And I asked that question. In fact, I went to a rabbi, breaking my non-atheist thing, and I said, what kind of, you know, spiritual person can believe in a God who would allow this to happen? A person who was closest to me in my life, you know, mm-hmm. And I said, there can't be a God who would allow this. And that was a feeling of bitterness toward the whole religious thing. I would like to go back to one thing real quick, if I could,
sure.
About atheists. We've kind of lumped them into one thing. I think they're different. Going back to Kyle,
who used the term non-theist.
And also that the answer is that it's not true, which I found very interesting. There's different shades of atheists. There's some atheists who are bitter and angry about religion. I think I fall in the other category of soft or weak atheist, mm-hmm. who doesn't believe but believes that other people have the absolute right to believe.
Right. So you don't make judgments about others?
Try not to. I'm not always good at it, but sometimes.
Alice wrote in to say on this subject that I have met a number of atheists who are not simply atheists, but vocally and very passionately against religion.
Yes.
To the point that they will become just as belligerent, judgmental, and often insulting as the extremist religious believers they rail against.
Yes.
I try to point out to these individuals that they are not just atheists, but are rather the evangelicals of the atheist world. Very interesting. And then, Mike, all kinds of different opinions here. Why is God so evil, he wonders, you know? Why would I want to believe in a God who created genocide, murder, and famine?
God did not create genocide, murder, and famine.
Oh, he doesn't accept the free will thing.
That is our...
He says he doesn't accept free will.
Yeah. Well,
but
again,
is that what you... I mean, I'm sure you've heard this question.
Well, I think we all asked that question.
Yeah.
You know, if there is a God, then how can there be slavery? If there's a God, how can there be Hiroshima? If there's a God, fill in the blank. My feeling on that is that the free will is that we... do these things. Is there genocide? Yes, there's genocide because people desire to kill people who are not like themselves for all kinds of reasons. That is the motivation. It's not God saying, go ahead and do that, though religion does get corrupted at the service of our own evil intentions.
My question would be, is God asleep when all these bad things happen?
My answer would be no.
Where is he?
That God is not asleep, but that God is... fully awake and fully engaged in the suffering that is happening to the people.
The question is yearning for us to respond in a more positive way.
The
question would be, how did God create the Holocaust? I mean, you know, where was he?
Mm-hmm.
Listen, we've got a couple of minutes left in this hour here. Let me squeeze in another call here. Daniel in Baltimore, go right ahead. Please be brief.
Hi. Yeah. Hi, Dan?
Yes, Daniel, go right ahead. Just please be brief.
Okay. I just want to make a comment. Usually when these conversations happen about religion and science and atheists, it's when we say religion, oftentimes we mean Christianity, and we should be clear because there's a lot of other faiths. I practice the Baha'i faith, and it's almost never represented in this kind of discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And it offers a very different perspective, as do other faiths. Like just the question that Kyle brought up, you know, if there's something that we believe that if your mind, if it doesn't make sense by logic or reason, then your heart cannot accept it. So that's a very fundamental part of our particular religion. And so, you know, we also believe in the harmony of science and religion. And it offers a very interesting perspective that's neither, you know, black nor white. So we have this kind of debate that's always going back and forth between the atheists and the Christians, as Christians representing all of religion, but of course they represent a part of it, and it's a very legitimate part, but it'd be nice to have a more inclusive discussion, perhaps.
Well, this wasn't meant to be a discussion about the religious diversity or even a discussion of atheism versus belief. It was how different people go about the world here as we see interest and in organized religion falling off. That's where we started this conversation. So we didn't mean to ignore anybody out there. It's just that the whole question of, you know, why do we see this decline in religious affiliation? And how? And this was a discussion in this hour with folks who stick with their faith. And Eric Green, we added you here for the balance on the other side, because actually we often hear from atheists that they're not represented on the show. So anyway, it's nice to have you here. It was an interesting discussion. Thank you very much, Eric.
You're welcome. Thank
Eric
you.
Green, who joined us from Arlington, Virginia, who visits Baltimore once a month to bring his Catholic wife to St. Jude Shrine. So thank you very much for being here. Reverend M. Dion Thompson, nice to see you again. Rector of the Church of the Holy Covenant Episcopal Church, located on the Alameda in Baltimore. And Anne-Marie Brennan-Zelenka, thank you also for your comments.
Thank you.
And happy birthday again to you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you, Father Thompson.
I'll look forward to seeing you on the number 3 bus.
Okay, see you there. Was that the number 3 or the number 11? No, it was the number 3. Thank you very much. So, everybody, have a great afternoon. Thank you for tuning in to Midday. We'll see you next time.